Breaking Free: Understanding the Entrapment of Women in Personal Life. This blog post explores the revolutionary work of forensic social worker and sociologist Evan Stark, particularly his book, Coercive Control: How Men Entrap Women in Personal Life, 2007. Stark's research fundamentally redefines domestic abuse, arguing it is not a random collection of physical assaults but a calculated, ongoing strategy of domination used by men to strip women of their liberty and autonomy. By analyzing stark examples, from the weaponization of children, instrumental intimidation, to the exploitation of immigrant women's legal status, this post demonstrates why Stark's work is essential to achieving true justice for survivors and changing how the world sees domestic violence. The core motivation for Stark's decades of work stems from the personal experiences he witnessed in the early battered women's shelters, where survivors consistently revealed that the fear and psychological manipulation were often not the worst part of the abuse, from a series of physical assaults to a systematic, ongoing liberty crime, a pattern of domination aimed at stripping a woman of her autonomy and personhood. This model is often referred to as intimate terrorism because it establishes a state of chronic fear and entrapment, akin to a hostage situation. The tactics of coercive control are highly specific and designed for micro-regulation of the victim's daily existence, making obedience the only viable option for survival. Isolation, systematically cutting off the victim from friends, family, and support systems, or constant monitoring of communications to ensure sole dependency on the abuser. Financial entrapment, withholding funds, giving a punitive allowance, demanding receipts for purchases, or sabotaging employment to render the victim entirely dependent. Micromanagement, enforcing arbitrary, exhausting rules over basic needs, e.g., food logs, when to sleep, what to wear, turning the victim into a hostage in their own home. Psychological warfare, using gaslighting to manipulate the victim into doubting their own sanity, memory, and perception of reality. These gaslight games are why victims often present with pseudo-psychiatric labels, a direct result of the chronic abuse. Intimidation, using the constant threat of violence, property destruction, or self-harm to maintain a state of chronic fear. Victims present with characteristics like chronic fear and hypervigilance, a rational response to survival. 3. Rejecting the victim profile and pathologization. Stark's framework consciously moves away from establishing typical characteristics of women before abuse. His theory dictates that the focus must be entirely on the perpetrator's deliberate conduct and the resulting environment of entrapment. Shifting the burden, Stark argues that the symptoms exhibited by victims, like psychological distress and fear, are not signs of inherent weakness or a pre-existing condition. They are the rational and expected response to living under a pervasive regime of domination. Challenging battered woman syndrome, BWS, Stark rejects BWS as a defense because it pathologizes the victim, requiring her to prove a psychological defect, like learned helplessness, to gain legal sympathy. The coercive control model shifts the justice claim from the victim's mental state to the abuser's systematic denial of her liberty. 4. Amplified entrapment, vulnerable populations. Stark emphasizes that coercive control is amplified by a victim's structural vulnerabilities, like immigration status, and is often instrumental, particularly against children. Immigrant women, intersecting vulnerability. Abusers weaponize the victim's insecure legal status as an additional form of control. Immigrant women-related threats: abusers refuse to file necessary papers, withdraw sponsorship, or explicitly threaten to call the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, for deportation. Case example: an immigrant woman who reported abuse was interrogated by police about her immigration status, rather than action being taken against her husband, demonstrating that the system itself isolates her. Economic and cultural control: abusers may forbid victims from learning the local language or punish them for associating with other cultures, ensuring complete linguistic and financial dependency. Amplification by political climate: Stark's framework is especially relevant today, as increased ICE raids and harsh immigration rhetoric in major US cities magnify the terror wielded by abusers. This political climate creates a culture of fear that prevents undocumented victims from calling the police, seeking shelter, or pursuing protection orders, leaving them without any outside system to counter the abuser's total control. Children, instrumental intimidation. Stark argues that when children are involved, the abuse is often instrumental, meaning the children are used as pawns to control the mother. The intent, the goal is to destroy children to dominate their mothers by fracturing the mother-child relationship and making the children see their mother as weak. Abusers intentionally terrorize their partners in front of the children to make the children see their mothers as weak. Children often learn to become silent or outwardly compliant, which reinforces the abuser's power. 1. The threat of public humiliation, post-separation stalking. This is one of Stark's most frequently cited examples, demonstrating how abusers use a child's vulnerability and a mother's protectiveness to impose fear even after separation. Case example: an abusive father has a protective order against him, prohibiting contact with the mother and children. He deliberately appears at his child's school performance, soccer game, or public event. Instrumental intimidation: the abuser knows this action violates the court order and terrorizes the mother. He is essentially daring his victim to call the police and create a scene in front of the child, the school, and the community. The mother is trapped. She can either endure the violation and the accompanying fear, or intervene and cause public distress to the child, thus allowing the abuser to inflict further emotional damage. The goal is to demonstrate total power by violating boundaries the court or the family set. 2. Physical harm as a staged performance. This category highlights cases where the physical harm to the child is intended solely to manipulate the adult victim, serving as the ultimate threat of what the abuser is capable of. Case example: worst case scenario. Stark cites an example of a man in his practice who drowned his infant daughter during a custody dispute to punish his estranged wife. Instrumental intimidation. Stark notes the abuser often has no negative feelings toward the children but harms or kills them to show the partner what he is capable of doing. The child serves the function of a scapegoat or whipping boy, where the abuse is a staged performance directed toward the primary victim, the mother, to ensure compliance or inflict maximum anguish. The child is simply the most potent instrument the abuser has left to wield when the mother tries to assert her liberty. 3. Monopolizing maternal attention. In the home environment, abusers use the demand for the mother's attention to systematically isolate the children from the protective parent, damaging the mother-child bond. Case example: abusive fathers demand high levels of attention from the mother at the expense of the children. Mothers reported scenarios where the father would interrupt simple acts of maternal affection, such as a mother brushing her daughter's hair, saying things like, "You've spent enough attention on her, what about my attention?" Instrumental intimidation: this tactic monopolizes the mother's time and forces her to structurally isolate the children. The children are deprived of the material, social, and emotional resources they need to thrive, making them more vulnerable and giving the abuser an additional lever of control over the mother, who fears for their well-being. 4. Co-opting children's voice and behavior. Abusers manipulate the child's behavior and reality to maintain control and erode the mother's authority. A. Using the child as a surveillance tool. This tactic turns the child into an unwitting or manipulated spy, effectively making the abuser omnipresent even when physically absent. The abuser co-opts the child's conversations and observations to control the mother. Case example: a father establishes a routine where, immediately after the children return from the mother's home, he interrogates them. He asks highly specific questions such as, "What did mom buy at the store? Did she use the emergency credit card? Who did she talk to on the phone? What was she wearing?" Co-option: the child learns that sharing details about the mother's private life is the path to the father's approval and affection. The child's natural impulse to share is corrupted into a monitoring function. This forces the child to align with the abuser and makes the mother feel perpetually monitored by her own children. B. Microregulation of the mother-child bond. The abuser co-opts the child's schedule and activities to deliberately undermine the mother's authority and capacity as a parent, restricting her autonomy and liberty. Case example: the abuser dictates every detail of the child's routine at the mother's home, often using the child to enforce these arbitrary rules. This may involve food logs, e.g., forbidding the mother from giving the child certain healthy snacks, claiming the child hates them, dictating homework times that conflict with the mother's work schedule, or micromanaging dress, tell your mother daddy says you can't go to school in those pants. Co-option, the child is forced into a position of judging or policing the mother according to the abuser's rules. The mother's ability to parent based on her own judgment is destroyed, trapping her in a cycle of obedience and preventing her from developing the personhood Stark argues is essential to freedom. See coercive control in the legal separation context. The highest form of co-opting a child's voice occurs when the abuser manipulates the child's words and behavior to gain an advantage in custody disputes, a tactic Stark describes as legal abuse or systems abuse. Case example. In court proceedings, an abuser may groom the child to express an absolute preference to live with him, or to state fear of the mother. The abuser may rehearse testimonies or coach the child on specific language, often involving claims of parental alienation against the mother, the victim. Co-option, the child's natural distress over the separation or the trauma of the coercive environment is weaponized. The child's choice is not a genuine expression of a preference, but a voice co-opted by fear and loyalty to the abuser, who holds the power. Stark stresses that this tactic is devastating because the legal system often takes the child's expressed voice at face value, thereby institutionalizing the coercive control and further endangering the mother. 5. The judicial paradox, sentencing inequity. Case example Maria, her husband established total entrapment by weaponizing immigration. He deliberately delayed or refused to file her legal paperwork while explicitly threatening deportation to enforce obedience. Total isolation. He isolated her linguistically and socially, forbidding English, cutting off family, and economically, preventing work, confiscating documents. When the abuse escalated, Maria felt the legal system offered no protection, believing reporting the violence meant automatic deportation. Her use of lethal force was a desperate reaction to a hostage-like situation. The crucial point for Stark is that the traditional battered woman syndrome, BWS, defense fails because it doesn't account for the unique, overwhelming pressure of immigration entrapment. Stark argues her act was rational resistance against the systematic appropriation of her liberty, a crime directly enabled by the U.S. immigration structure. The coercive control framework is necessary to ensure the court recognizes this unique oppression as the context for her actions. Scales hash the case of Sally Challen. Sally Challen was convicted of murdering her husband, Richard Challen, in 2010. Her case, particularly the subsequent appeal, highlighted how traditional criminal law often fails to account for the impact of decades-long coercive control. 1. The relationship. A lifelong pattern of control. Beginning of control. Sally met Richard when she was 15 and he was 22. Their relationship, which lasted for over 40 years, was later characterized by her sons and defense team as a lifelong campaign of fear and psychological abuse waged by Richard. Controlling behaviors. The pattern of coercive control included isolation, controlling who Sally could socialize with, effectively isolating her from friends and family. Financial control, restricting her access to and control over money. Humiliation and gaslighting, bullying, humiliating her, and forcing her to question her own sanity. Richard would engage in numerous affairs and visit brothels, yet demand strict adherence to his rules from Sally. Microregulation, dictating how she should look and restricting her movement, creating a culture of dependency and fear. Entrapment. After a separation, Richard only agreed to reconciliation on the condition that Sally sign a postnuptial agreement he drafted, which was highly unfavorable to her, e.g., denying her rights to the marital home and forbidding her from speaking to strangers or interrupting him. This demonstrated a final, suffocating form of control designed to maintain her dependency. 2. The crime and initial trial. The killing. In 2010, after discovering evidence of her husband's continued infidelity despite promises of reconciliation, Sally killed Richard with a hammer. 1. The verdict. She was initially convicted of murder in 2011. The prosecution and original court proceedings focused on the final act of violence, portraying her actions as being driven by jealousy and rage, which is the traditional framework for domestic violence cases involving a woman killing her abuser. The courts focused on a snapshot of her life, not the 41 years of abuse. 14.3. The appeal and coercive control. Evan Stark's influence. On appeal, Professor Evan Stark supplied expert testimony regarding the dynamics of coercive control. Her legal team argued that she was a victim of psychological abuse and entrapment, and her actions should be understood in the context of a victim who had reached a breaking point due to systematic abuse that restricted her liberty. A liberty crime. The defense reframed the years of abuse using Stark's model, arguing that the psychological and emotional abuse had driven her to a state of diminished responsibility or a loss of control, an argument that was difficult to sustain under older legal standards that required a sudden and temporary loss of control. Outcome: the Court of Appeal ultimately quashed her murder conviction in 2019, based on new psychiatric evidence, partially stemming from the context of coercive control that was not available at her original trial. She subsequently pleaded guilty to manslaughter and was released having served the equivalent of her sentence. 18. Significance to Stark's theory. The Challen case provided a powerful, real-world example supporting Stark's argument that 1. Abuse is systemic. It validated the need to view domestic abuse as an ongoing pattern of control and oppression, not just a series of isolated violent incidents. 2. Harm to liberty. It highlighted how the true harm is the entrapment and subjugation that strip a woman of her autonomy and personhood, leading to extreme consequences. 3. Law must evolve. It demonstrated the failure of legal systems to properly recognize the gravity of non-physical, long-term coercive control, pushing for the use of the new coercive control offense, introduced in the UK in 2015, after Challen's original trial, in future cases to account for the full experience of the victim.